You're listening to Greater LA. It's KCRW's show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. Hey there, I'm Steve Chiatakis. I hope you had a nice holiday. Let's go to a football game now. That's not football. That's the sound of running water. Well, you're listening, I guess, to the whoosh of the fountain at an entrance to the new SoFi football stadium in Inglewood, soon to be home to the NFL's Rams and Chargers. Construction's nearly done. The stadium held its virtual ribbon cutting today. KCRW's architecture and design correspondent Francis Anderton got a peek at the almost complete stadium last week. And this Sunday, the first game, the Rams host the Dallas Cowboys. So head on over to the Oh, wait, you can't do that, right? The stadium is closed to fans. They'll be holding games there like all pro sports are doing right now, with no one watching in the stands. But be patient.
I think there's very much going to be a thirst to come back to this environment that's joyful, that people know so well.
That's Chris Hibbs. He's chief commercial officer for the SoFi Stadium, and he's feeling good when he looks ahead.
As we're talking to fans and brands and customers about 2021, there's already a positive feeling and positive momentum towards the world is going to be in a much better place when we get into next year.
For now, though, 70,000 empty seats. And what will we see as we watch from our sofas and homes? KCRW's Francis Anderton is here to tell us. Hi, Francis.
Hi, Steve.
And what will you see?
Well, what I anticipate you will see, Steve, if you're watching from your couch, is that there will be a drone above the stadium that will deliver some pretty fabulous images looking down on a shimmering lake and the stadium itself with its huge bowl, its outdoor plazas, all covered in a see-through sail-like kind of structure. Kevin Demoff is COO of the Los Angeles Rams, and he told me that they planned the building being very aware of the fact that LAX is just west of Inglewood and that this stadium is under the flight path when you fly into LA.
This is one of the first things you see in Southern California, so the building had to be, you know, one of those great architectural buildings in Southern California. And so I think when you look at the design and the inspiration, the metal paneling, similar to Disney Hall, you know, inspirations from the Getty Center. You see all of those things coming together, and hopefully this building will be part of that architecture.
So he mentions Disney Concert Hall, which is in downtown LA. He mentions the Getty, which is up the 405. What does he mean by that? This building will be a part of that architecture.
Well, he's referring to some of the elements of those buildings. For example, the stadium is wrapped overhead, as I mentioned, in this continuous curving skin that's made of metal and translucent ETFE. That's a kind of very, very strong plastic. And it all has a kind of sail or wave-like quality, which brings to mind the Frank Gehry-designed Disney Concert Hall. Then much of the structure of the stadium, both inside and outside, is white, very bright white. At the Getty Center Museum overlooking West LA, you find there white metal panels along with the travertine marble and also a kind of openness, both of those attributes you find at the stadium. I should add, the flight path we mentioned earlier means that the stadium had to be buried 100 feet down into the ground to meet FAA regulations. To make the drop down more of a pleasant experience, not kind of dark and pokey, the designers have created what they call canyons, outdoor seating areas with their clubs that have stepped retaining walls filled with plants. So the whole thing is not your regular massive stadium poking up out of the ground. It's got this airy, open, very light quality. And clearly the intent here is to have people hang out in its outdoor, open to the sky plazas.
And, you know, it looks like a spaceship from above, right? I mean, it's got those tiles that are really shiny. And it sounds like a destination, Francis. Like, this is sounding less and less like a football stadium and more like the place to go.
Destination is the exact word, Steve. That's what this place is. And the stadium is just the first and probably most prominent structure in what is really a vast complex, 300 acres, called Hollywood Park, just as it was when it was a racetrack. This is a colossal multi-billion development. It's largely financed by Stan Kroenke, owner of the Rams. Think retail offices, the NFL Network headquarters, 2,500 homes. All of this set into a park-like setting. And then if you are a ticket holder, Steve, I mean, just imagine the clubs and suites that you get to experience at this stadium. It's got a sort of Vegas feel, lots and lots of glittery, shiny, sleek finishes. And then there's this big visual effect. You've probably seen pictures about it, the so-called video board, also known as the Oculus. And this is a vast digital screen. It's 70,000 square feet. It has images on both sides. It's shaped in a continuous loop that hangs over the field. To me, it just looked like this absolutely massive onion ring. Anyway, what's the point of this? What is the point of this Oculus? Well, Lance Evans, he's the lead architect on the building with the firm HKS, and he says it allows for multiple video feeds during the game.
So you could see replays, live action, alternate events, and say fantasy stats all at the same time, all at the same scale, and doing so in a way that brings the digital experience closer to the fan.
Okay, so this sounds splendid, Francis. I mean, you know, it's a destination, it's shiny, you've got, you know, a lake and this and that over there, but also we're in this really troubling time. Thousands of people have lost their jobs because of the pandemic, not to mention that COVID itself had several workers test positive for the novel coronavirus. I mean, it kind of feels a little wrong, doesn't it, to celebrate and have nice things, you know?
Well, certainly the jury's out. Is this the wrong time or is this exactly the right time? It is true that I have read 75 workers building the stadium contracted COVID-19. Happily, none of those COVID sufferers died. Some remained asymptomatic. And yes, the question is, should they have stopped construction to meet this moment? Or is there a boost to morale to have this building be completed using thousands of workers, 4,000 workers working on this building? Have it completed during this, you know, otherwise very pessimistic time. So there are critics of the projects and the changes, some would call it gentrification, that are coming to Inglewood. Kevin Demoff, COO of the Rams, is very aware of the criticisms, and he says they're giving back to Inglewood in many, many ways.
We've built a new playground, K through 5, along with American Airlines. We're investing along with City Year and new schools this year. We completely redid the playing field at Morningside High School and gave them new uniforms, new football helmets. We've gotten involved and engaged in this project. Over $100 million in construction wages has gone to local residents. You know, close to, I believe, $750 million invested in women and minority-owned businesses. So all of these are investments into the Inglewood community, along with 2,500 permanent jobs that should be created as part of this stadium on game day.
So you get the picture, Steve. This is set against the reality of Inglewood, which reportedly has a median household income of just over $46,000. Rents and house prices in that city have skyrocketed. This has caused displacement. So yes, this project's bringing upheaval. But the city and the builders will say they're creating a destination with a park and public gathering spots that are going to be serving the local residents in ways far beyond 20 football games a year.
KCRW's Francis Anderton, who runs our design and architecture desk. As always, Francis, thanks.
You're very welcome, Steve.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Well, now, as Francis just pointed out, the folks at the stadium say they have invested in Inglewood and in the community. And by the way, Inglewood is no stranger to change. According to a recent analysis of housing trends, the neighborhood is the fastest growing market in the region. And SoFi Stadium will likely work as a steroid to juice that market, which means a lot of folks are at risk of getting priced out altogether. Damian Goodman is the founder and executive director of the Crenshaw Subway Coalition. That's an organization that's been working against gentrification in Inglewood, and he's with us right now. Damian, welcome.
It's good to be with you.
The stadium is only just officially opening today, but it's already obviously had a lot of effect on the community. How do you feel about this stadium? I mean, it's too late to be against it, right?
Well, I think there are a lot of things at play in this gentrification crisis that is sweeping mostly black and brown communities of Los Angeles and Inglewood. You know, Inglewood is, I said, the crux of a crescent that is Mid-City, West Adams, Crenshaw District, that is the stronghold of black Los Angeles, black Los Angeles region, that is a black and brown community that's undergoing a significant amount of pressures, and they come from a variety of places. So in West Adams, you see that it's the creative arts industry. And in Crenshaw, you see it's the Expo line and the soon-to-be Crenshaw line. And then down in Inglewood, you see the Crenshaw line coupled with the SoFi Stadium, the new Clippers Arena. And these new, each of these are indications to the broader real estate market that an area that has had historically undervalued real estate is going to become hot. And so the drastic increases, you know, some 63% increase in home values in Inglewood just in the last 6 years, and similar numbers in the Hyde Park community in Los Angeles, directly adjacent, in the Crenshaw community, is a sign of a price out of the longtime low-income and working-class black and brown people, but also a push out. For a lot of residents that are in residential properties, the rental price limits, I wouldn't call it rent control, but the rental price limits that exist both in Los Angeles and in Inglewood have been insufficient to respond to the current wave. And this is all pre-COVID-19. We know that's just added to the displacement pressures. People and landlords are trying to take advantage of those that simply can't work anymore. And so you're seeing just in these historic black and brown communities of Los Angeles and Inglewood, a price out and a push out that is calculated, that is intentional, that has private actors in the form of those that invested in this $5 billion stadium, those that will invest in the 2,200 market rate units, those that have invested in the Culver City creative arts economy, those that have invested in the infrastructure, in an absence of protective policies from the local level to make sure that the neighbors that have long held down these communities, well before investment was even thinking about coming into them, have some stability and can actually be there to enjoy the changes.
Have you talked, I mean, obviously you're an activist, you're somebody who is well into this issue, and I wonder what you're saying to the city or to, you know, say a Mayor James Butts, who has been championing this stadium for such a long time. He's an African-American man. I mean, wouldn't he want what's best for the community in a community that's at least half black, right?
Yeah, I mean, the numbers in Inglewood are about 40% black, 50% brown. And let's be clear, you know, there are a lot of people that are on the ground in Inglewood, specifically Uplift Inglewood and the Lenox Inglewood Tenants Union, that have been directly, confrontational with the existing elected leadership, just as we are in Los Angeles with the existing black leadership that currently are in the seats of power. And, you know, what they play off of is this frustration among, and it's justifiable frustration among residents and mostly homeowners who have not seen investment, have not seen the good grocery stores, they have not seen the support at retail, who want to see some improvement. And they make it seem as though these improvements have to come at the cost of the long-standing working class, low-income black and brown folk. And so you see this game being played over and over again. Well, you want to see a new vitality. You want to see new jobs. You want to see, you know, good sit-down restaurants and quality grocers. But they don't talk about the other end of it, which is they haven't put in place the protective measures so that the people who benefit from them can stay. I sympathize often with them, but I can't see that a new Whole Foods can come at the cost of grandmama being pushed out. I see that in ultimately there's this collusion that's taking place between the real estate developers and the elected officials who know what the results of these types of things. This is not new. You know, James Baldwin in the 60s said urban renewal, which was a government phase program with private real estate actors, that urban renewal was Negro removal. This is not new. This goes back to the basis of, in some respects, the establishment of this country, displacement and exploitation of land and labor, right? And so to those elected officials, I don't care what color they are, whether they're black, brown, white, or purple. If you're not for making sure the existing residents of your city, of your municipality, your community, your council district can be stable and can enjoy those benefits from that new private sector investment or that new public sector investment, then who are you serving? You're seeking to serve and you're seeking to bring in another class of people, people who just typically are a lot more affluent and don't look like the existing residents. And that, in so many respects, gets back to the crux of this, right? Are Black elected officials comfortable being in comfortable Black and brown spaces? Or do they feel that the only road to prosperity and to improvement is by bringing in those that don't look like them? And that's when we start to get to psychological challenges that exist within a lot of these individual elected officials. But ultimately, you know, my whole point in all of this, when we come back to, is don't assume that the Uplift Inglewood or the Lenox and Inglewood Tenants Union or the Crenshaw Subway Coalition have not made these points to them. Don't pretend as though or assume that the residents are not banging on the door of these elected officials every day, letting them know that the struggles of the working class Black and brown people, they know, and they're either doing nothing or insufficient. They're doing insufficient actions to respond to it.
Well, when you say nothing, I mean, what do you say to the Rams folks who say they are investing in the area, in minority-owned businesses and creating permanent jobs, building playgrounds, you know, green spaces, things like that, economic development that helps everybody in the community? Do you think that's just a bunch of lip service?
Well, I mean, the stadium was $5 billion, and is there a commensurate amount of money that's going into stabilizing the over 100,000 residents of Inglewood? That stadium comes at a $5 billion investment and will reap rewards for those that have invested in it for generations, right? Much as all of the real estate activity that's around the stadium. It's not just this stadium, it's the 2,200 market rate units, of which we understand that Mr. Kroenke went to the Inglewood City Council and said, how many of them do you want to be affordable? And the Inglewood mayor and council said none. You know, it's this surrounding real estate market that is a community that is 65-66% renters that are being pressured and pushed out. I mean, again, this is not a choice that folk have to make. If you want to invest in improving the conditions of long-term residents of communities like Inglewood, Hyde Park, Crenshaw, these historic Black and brown communities, there are things that you can do. There are dollars you can put into. There is policy you can make that makes sure that those residents improve. Those residents see economic mobility. Those residents see an increase in improvement in their quality of life. But in the absence of those things, in the absence of real rent control, in the absence of, you know, large land trusts that take land off the speculative real estate market and put them into permanently affordable structures, in the absence of those things, those new schools, those new playgrounds, that new transit is for someone else. The people who make up the community today will not be the people who make up the community 10 years, let alone 20 and 30 years from now. And this is not theoretical. This is what we see taking place in cities and regions throughout the country and world. Just talk to those in West Oakland. Just talk to those in San Francisco. Just talk to those in Harlem. This is as certain as the sun rising in the east and setting in the west. And the elected officials and the private actors have something they can do. And right now it's insufficient.
Damian Goodman, founder and executive director of the Crenshaw Subway Coalition. Damian, thanks for your time. Boy, I'll tell you, we're going to be talking about this for a long time.
Yes, we will.
I'm moving on now with Greater LA, and now another city, another stadium, and another issue about who owns what. This time, it's in the County of Orange. The city of Anaheim wants to sell Angel Stadium and the surrounding land for $150 million. It sounds like a lot of money, right? $150 million, but actually it's not. Angel Stadium's a big place, and it's less than half the price tag announced last year when private talks began. Let's listen to Anaheim Mayor Harry Sidhu.
This plan will turn the area around the stadium into an exciting place we can be proud of. It'll bring affordable housing so working families can live in what will be one of the most desirable parts of Anaheim.
But who's footing the bill for those affordable housing units and the 7-acre park that surrounds them and the stadium? Gustavo Arellano writes for the LA Times. He's here with KCRW's Orange County line. Hey, Gustavo.
Hola, Steve.
Now, the city has owned this stadium for more than 50 years. Why is it selling it now?
Because, well, the city needs money, as always, in these day and age. But also, they've been trying to develop that land around Angel Stadium forever. Oh, my God. There's been so many proposals over the past 25 years. I remember they were going to do, like, indoor surfing. They were going to do indoor skiing. All these cockamamie proposals. And so, finally, they're just getting out of the game. And they also see that Angel Stadium is old, and it needs to be either replaced or refurbished. And the city just doesn't have the money. So here comes Artie Moreno, the owner of the Angels, and says, hey, I'll buy it off of you. Let's make a deal.
I'll buy it off of you. By the way, Artie Moreno and the Angels have threatened to move, have threatened to leave Anaheim in the past. That threat has centered on the stadium. They wanted something new and brighter down the road. Is what we're seeing here a byproduct of that?
Oh, that's totally what it is. Let's not forget that a couple of years ago, the city of Anaheim, just to assuage the demands of Artie Moreno, wanted to lease the land around Angel Stadium for $1 a year, and Artie Moreno would be able to do whatever development. There was such an uproar from the residents of Anaheim that that got scrapped. So instead, the city and the Angels, they got together about 2018. They talked about for a year, and then they came up with this decision in 2019 to sell the stadium to the Angels and the land around it. And at the time, the price was estimated to be about $325 million. Now, of course, we're getting news that the actual cash that the city of Anaheim will get from the sale will actually be $150
million. All right, $150 million. So the Angels are going to buy the stadium and the area around it?
Yeah. The reason why you have the reduced price tag is that the city is asking Moreno to develop about 500 affordable housing units, apartments, and also develop a park, as you said, about 7 acres. So that, according to the city, is going to cost Moreno $150 million. So it's not technically a taxpayer subsidized, but at the same time, they're giving Moreno a huge discount. He has to build it, but in return, he doesn't have to pay as much for the land around it and the stadium.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. So $150 million is, I mean, yeah, we don't have that kind of money, you or I, right? But $150 million for a large stadium, what are we talking, like 50,000 seat stadium that, granted, has been around for a long time, but still is a valuable piece of property. I mean, it just seems like Artie Moreno is getting a really good deal.
Oh, and then some. The city itself, they did an appraisal. Like, if they put the land around Angel Stadium and Angel Stadium out in the open market, what could they possibly get? And one of the estimates, it went as high as $500 million. That's $500 million. And think about it. This is prime real estate property right off the 57, near the, not too far away from the 5, or the 91, rather, next to, you know, the Arctic Station, which, so you're going to have public transportation going there across the street from the Honda Center. This is prime real estate property. And so for the city to basically give a heavily discounted price for all of this for a baseball team that has consistently threatened to move over the past couple of years, it's preposterous, frankly.
So what do residents say about, I mean, what do the people in Anaheim say about all of this?
Well, this is the problem, of course, with baseball or with sports. You're going to have the fans. They don't care. They just want their beloved underperforming Halos to be here for the next 50 years, for their lifetime. I mean, in L.A., even though people despise the McCourts, you know, the previous owner of the Dodgers could have done almost anything possible and the fans would have just supported them. So what's going to happen, there's a lawsuit already trying to block this sale, but what's going to happen is that you're going to need politicians in Anaheim to try to rally up residents and say, hey, this is not ultimately good for the financial future of the city. Of course, that rarely works. Look at what's happened with Disneyland over the past 65 years. They could get almost whatever they want with the city, and the Angels are basically trying to be the new Disneyland.
Gustavo Arellano with this week's Orange County Line. Gustavo, as always, thanks.
Gracias.
That's it for us this evening. Tomorrow, smoke is in the air, and you know the old saying about where there's smoke. Yeah, fires. And what all that smoke means for the air. Speaking of air, what a new agreement with several automakers means for California. With the Trump administration looking to relax car regulations, fiery mad about a deal between some automakers and the Golden State. We're online at kcrw.com/greaterLA. What do you think about the show? Would you like to subscribe to it? You can do that at the website kcrw.com/greaterLA. Special thanks to Jenna Cagle, Catherine Barnes, Sonia Geis, Mario Diaz, Phil Richards, Ray Guarna, Mario Saavedra, Jody Adler, Mike Newport, Evan George, and everyone else with their hands and ears on this show. Thanks for lending us your ears tonight. I'm Steve Chiantega. Stay cool, stay safe, have a great night.